It's Monday, December 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, a social media tweet sets off discussion about Taiwan, China, and the United States. Voters in Austria decide if a far-right leader is right for them.
The whole rationale for doing a trial is to see if it does work. We have no idea whether it will work or not.
The complicated search for an AIDS vaccine. Also ahead, the latest on Kanye West's condition. It's all on today's International Edition. President-elect Donald Trump's team is downplaying the significance of his telephone conversation with President Tsai Ing-wen of Taiwan, with which the United States has had no formal diplomatic ties since 1979. Vice President-elect Mike Pence on Sunday on ABC's This Week program said this was a courtesy call, and he added, "It's a little mystifying to me that President Obama can reach out to a murdering dictator in Cuba in the last year and be hailed as a hero for doing it," while President-elect Donald Trump takes a courtesy call from the democratically elected leader in Taiwan, and it's become something of a controversy. Donald Trump's tweet on Friday announcing a telephone conversation with President Tsai stoked questions as to whether he intends to alter America's long-standing acknowledgment of Beijing's One China policy that precludes any official recognition of Taiwan. But while saying the controversy is overblown, Pence did not dispute that Trump intends a more assertive U.S. posture towards China on trade and other matters. We take the assertive stance of checking in with VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman to discuss more about Trump's tweets and his early international diplomacy.
Jim, Donald Trump's tweets continue to be a source of alternatingly consternation, humor, but this is something where there could actually be some real fallout on the world stage. Ever since the 1970s, the United States has accommodated the Chinese position on Taiwan, which is that Taiwan, for all intents and purposes, does not exist as a nation, that we adhere to the One China policy, which recognizes Beijing, which recognizes China. Nevertheless, the United States has had a military relationship with Taiwan for a very long time. Even though the United States does not officially recognize Taiwan, I mean, it would be silly to say that there are no relations between the two countries on military matters, on commercial matters. And so, apparently, President-elect Donald Trump got a phone call from Taiwanese leader Tsai. I suspect that if this had been done in secret and wraps and it had been kept under wraps, it would be no big deal. But Donald Trump, as he is prone to do, went on Twitter and announced it to the world.
I don't recall another president-elect from which we have heard so much information about phone calls and conversations with world leaders as they're coming into office as we've heard from Donald Trump. And I guess for those of us in the media who have a tough time covering him, because access is difficult to Donald Trump, Twitter is a little bit of a treasure trove.
It almost calls into question whether he's going to need a communications secretary, a spokesperson of some sort, when he is, in essence, his own spokesperson. He takes to Twitter and says what's on his mind and announces things as they're happening. In all seriousness, obviously he's going to have a press secretary. But I suspect that that press secretary's job is going to be made interesting, shall we say, by the degree to which Donald Trump maintains his Twitter account.
We saw that on the campaign trail with his vice presidential candidate, Mike Pence, who often had to backtrack things that Trump was saying and kind of calm the waters a little bit, sometimes outright contradicting what Donald Trump said. And this was one of the points, too, that Hillary Clinton had made repeatedly in her campaign for the presidency, was that do you want somebody in office who's going to be just blurting out all this stuff on Twitter and perhaps creating an international incident?
That was absolutely one of the central points of contention of the campaign, where Hillary Clinton said that Donald Trump would be a bull in a china shop and wreck everything. And Donald Trump said, well, no, I think we need more assertive U.S. leadership. I'm normally at the Senate, and I have had a chance to speak with the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Bob Corker, a Republican who, by the way, is being considered for Secretary of State. We don't know who the final pick will be, but he is on that list of potential candidates. And he made an argument to me that I thought was interesting. His argument was that nobody on the world stage fears Barack Obama. That there is a sense that you can do anything and Barack Obama's response at most will be a slap on the wrist, some tut-tutting in front of a podium. And he thinks that what's truly needed, even if what Donald Trump says isn't always appropriate for the moment or the political situation, that simply having someone who is slightly unpredictable and who will not let things slide and who has a bit of a mean streak, that could, Senator Corker was arguing that could actually be beneficial. If he thinks that the United States needs to be feared as much as it needs to be admired. We shall see.
Mm-hmm. Fortunately for us, we have a veteran on Capitol Hill watching all of the developments as they unfold, and we're able to talk to VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman each and every week. Michael, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
Time now to check out the social media buzz on our top story. And to do that, International Edition's G. Abby Lee joins me here in the studio. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
So it looks like President-elect Donald Trump is not too fond of Saturday Night Live.
Not very much. He sent out this tweet. Just tried watching Saturday Night Live. Unwatchable. Totally biased. Not funny. And the Baldwin impersonation just can't get any worse. Sad. Now, in a reply to that tweet, Alec Baldwin himself, who played Trump in the weekly comedy show, tweeted this. Release your tax returns and I will stop. Ha! The American actor is using his foundation's handle, at ABF Alec Baldwin.
Okay, well, what's Twitter's user's reaction to this?
Jim, the top response to the Trump's initial tweet received more than 53,000 likes so far. It reads like this. You are the president-elect. Pick your battles, man. You're embarrassing yourself. One of the most common replies was asking him whether he's going to do this every week, referring to his Twitter responses through the SNL skits. There should be a hashtag for that if he does it every week, like Trump's reactions or something. Mm-hmm. Trump supporters, however, expressed they are fed up with a quote-unquote mainstream media, which they consider NBC to be one of them. Although it was rather hard to find the reactions, one tweet that I found argued, TV is absolute trash and brainwashing. Now, this tweet appears to be in line with what Trump supporters believe in, which is that the mainstream media is not accurately nor sufficiently covering the concerns of a vast majority of Americans.
Okay, I'm sure there was some reaction to his telephone call with the Taiwanese president.
Absolutely. So Vice President-elect Mike Pence's appearance on the This Week ABC is definitely making the rounds on Twitter. And on the Sunday show, he said Trump's call with Madame Chai was nothing more than taking a courtesy call. While critics say every phone call a country's leader makes or takes has an impact, others say it was just a call and should not be interpreted as an aggressive move on Beijing, which, as you know, considers Taiwan to be part of China. Jim?
All right. Thank you so much for that. You can follow our program's account on our Twitter stream at VOA underscore IE. I'm there at VOA Stevenson, and G is at G Abby Lee. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia, a report says the toll in China coal mine blast has reached 32. Malaysia's Najib leads rally against Rohingya genocide. Thousands rally in Indonesia for tolerance after blasphemy protest. Afghan president says Taliban won't last without Pakistan's support. Pakistan opposition politicians slam hardline clerics' provincial win. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at the voanews.com website. And take the news with you. If you have a smartphone, try out our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. The world has been following elections in Austria to see if the outcome of the U.S. presidential election and British voters' decision to leave the European Union would produce that nation's first far-right leader since World War II in an election seen as a test for the strength of populist movements in Europe. VOA Europe correspondent Luis Ramirez is in Vienna. He joins us with the results of the second vote for Austria's leadership.
Well, a very clear victory for the candidate opposing far-right, the Freedom Party's Norbert Hofer. The victor in this election on Sunday was Alexander van der Bellen, who is a Green Party member and ran as an independent. This election was seen as a test of the strength of populist movements in Europe. Tonight, Europe got its answer that, that strength is not what many predicted it to be. It was not a wide margin, so the reality facing the new leaders of Austria will be that there is a very large far-right movement that is going to expect some changes, and that is there. In fact, I did a few moments with Norbert Hofer. I asked him what was the message that this election sent to the establishment. His reply was, well, that we are not done and that I will fight for the next election. So the story is not over, but for now, the result is a pretty clear loss for the populist movement here in Austria.
The results here in the United States and other things that have been happening in Europe, Britain's decision to leave the European Union helped to really put the spotlight on Hofer's campaign and his message. And I know voters were expressing a little bit of dissatisfaction, if you will, of the fact that such bitter divisions in race and in the makeup of the country have been exposed.
Well, this election was very much based on the anti-establishment sentiment. It certainly was bolstered by it. And those who supported Hofer said that, well, if the people of Britain can get Brexit passed and if the people of America can get Donald Trump elected, then we too can send that message. In a way, they did, because they turned out in numbers and, they put up a good fight and brought their discontent to the forefront. One of the big issues here, of course, is immigration. Austria has been a receiver of a large number of migrants, certainly relative to its population. This was a stop on the way to Germany for many thousands of migrants who were coming from mainly Syria last year. A lot of them decided to stay here. There was a very large number of asylum applications in 2015 that alarmed a number of people. That combined with seeing a string of terrorist attacks in France and Belgium and elsewhere in Europe during the past year caused many people to want to re-examine Austria's asylum and immigration policy.
Austria's population is under about 9 million. Do we have a sense of the turnout for both what the initial vote was in May and then this revote?
It was a very high turnout in this rerun of those elections. In May, the party of Hofer, which is the Freedom Party, the results showed it losing by 31,000 votes, very few. And so that prompted the party and other supporters of Hofer to call for an investigation. The Constitutional Court ruled that there were irregularities in regard to postal votes, mailed-in ballots, in the counting of them, and forced a rerun of those elections. That further galvanized Hofer's followers. In fact, I interviewed people in Vienna in the days leading up to the election who told me that and during that time, they changed their mind. They had voted for Alexander van der Bellen and had decided to vote for Hofer instead. The things that made them change, continued reports and continued incidents of terrorism across Western Europe. It did change the makeup, but ultimately, as we saw, the voters of Austria decided that they were going to stick to the centrist government of the type that has governed this country since the end of the Second World War.
VOA's Luis Ramirez in Vienna, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Just before World AIDS Day this year, South Africa began a multi-year trial of a vaccine that might save millions of lives and help put an end to AIDS. VOA's Carol Pearson reports that expectations are high.
It's been a long, frustrating search for a vaccine against AIDS. And although there are a lot of hopes pinned onto a new vaccine trial that just began in South Africa, there are reasons why an HIV vaccine has been so elusive. Dr. Anthony Fauci at the U.S. National Institutes of Health has spent his career studying the AIDS virus. His agency is one of the funders of the trial.
The challenge that we have with an HIV vaccine that's much different from the challenges that we have with any other vaccine is that we've got to do better than natural infection.
With other viruses like polio or measles, the body begins to fight the infection on its own. To develop a vaccine, scientists find a way to mimic the virus so the body makes an immune response to protect itself. Not so with HIV. A few years ago, an HIV vaccine candidate was tried in Thailand. It cut the risk of getting HIV by 31%. Not good enough to produce a vaccine, but good enough for scientists to think they were onto something. The trial in South Africa uses a strengthened version of this vaccine. Earlier this year, a small study there showed that it was safe and promising enough to use in a major study. But that doesn't mean it will succeed.
The whole rationale for doing a trial is to see if it does work. We have no idea whether it will work or not.
More than 5,000 people will participate in the trial. Some will receive the potential vaccine, others a placebo. All will be counseled on how to avoid getting the HIV virus. The results won't be known for at least 3 years. But in order for this trial to be successful, the vaccine has to protect at least half of those who get it. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Kanye West has been on a personal roller coaster for the last several weeks. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald stops by to fill us in on how Kanye is doing after his recent hospitalization interrupted his latest tour.
As I lay me down to sleep, I hear her speak to me.
The facts of the story, Jim, are pretty self-evident. He was released from the University of California, Los Angeles Medical Center after spending 9 days in the hospital. He entered the facility on November 21st. Now, those are the facts. After that, you get into some degree of speculation because not too many sources are going on the record about this. There are privacy issues, and there's a lot of speculation as to what exactly put him in the hospital. Just before he went in the hospital, Kanye was going on extended rants and his concert appearances. And he also pulled the plug on the rest of his St. Pablo tour for the remainder of 2016. After that, there was supposedly some sort of incident at his personal trainer's house, which led to the police being called and later the fire department. Sources tell Entertainment Weekly that doctors were reluctant to diagnose anything. At the time of his admittance, the official reasons given were exhaustion and dehydration. He was placed on a psychiatric hold in the hospital for his own protection. A source said West had suffered a mental breakdown while showing signs of paranoia and that his wife Kim Kardashian was the only person that he trusted. Kim evidently stayed with Kanye for most of the time that he was in the hospital. Entertainment Tonight quotes a source as saying West was also showing signs of stress following Kim's robbery in Paris. back in September. You might remember
that was a big deal.
Some thieves held her hostage in her residence and made off with a lot of jewelry. And understandably, she's been traumatized by the incident. And beyond that, sources close to Kanye West say he's never completely recovered from the sudden death of his mother back in 2007. He and his mother, Donda, were very, very close. And, of course, it's been, you know, a whirlwind of activity for Kanye West in the last 10 years. He's become a superstar. He married Kim Kardashian. He's never really been out of the public eye. And it's probably a combination of these and possibly some other things that we don't know about that put him in the hospital.
It doesn't seem to matter who the entertainer is these days. A lot of pressure is out there on people who are constantly in the public eye. And we've seen this manifest in different ways with other high-profile performers.
Mm-hmm. And exhaustion and dehydration are often the boilerplate answers for when performers choose to retire from the scene for a while, or when they're hospitalized, or when they go off the road. And there are so many reasons contributing to that.
And sometimes in these situations, we've seen where artists have kind of, you know, regrouped in private. These experiences have led them to some artistic brilliance later down the road. And then the anticipation among their fans of them returning kind of builds things up again.
That's exactly right. And that's what we may see with Kanye West. He may choose to just go underground for a while and reemerge with a brilliant new album and possibly a tour.
We wish him all the best, and we wish Ray all the best each and every week. He's out here with the Top 20 Countdown on VOA 1. You can also catch Ray
on my Twitter feed at Ray on the Hits.
Love to follow it. Thank you so much, Ray.
You got it, Jim. Thanks.
You've been listening to International Edition. For director Tracy Carter and engineer Thomas Blondett, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington, thanking you so much for joining us and wishing you a great day ahead.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The growing trend of intentional shutdowns of the internet and mobile networks threaten internet freedom. According to estimates, some 25 governments on almost every continent have intentionally prevented or disrupted access to such networks more than 50 times since the beginning of 2016, a rate of at least once every 6 days. The United States earlier this year joined the consensus at the United Nations Human Rights Council in passing a resolution condemning intentional disruptions of access to or dissemination of information online in violation of human rights law. U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor, Tom Malinowski, noted that this Internet Freedom Resolution echoes a Freedom Online Conference joint statement from 2011 that labeled mandatory blocking of social networking technologies and platforms to be an extreme measure strictly subject to human rights law. These network disruptions have a major economic impact. A Brookings Institution report estimates that Ethiopia suffered an $8.5 million loss for an April internet shutdown. More recently, in October, Ethiopia initiated a new shutdown as part of the government's ongoing state of emergency, which may have cost the Ethiopian economy just under $500,000 U.S. dollars a day in lost GDP. It is particularly alarming that elections-related internet shutdowns are becoming increasingly common. In February, the government of Uganda ordered mobile phone and internet service providers to block access to social media sites on the day of contested national elections. Weeks later, the government of the Republic of Congo ordered a nationwide shutdown of mobile phone networks in the lead-up to national elections. But not all the news is bad. In August, Ghanaian President John Dramani Mahama publicly reaffirmed Ghana's commitment to protect freedom of expression online and refrain from restricting social media use in the lead-up to national elections in December. The United States government commends the initiative taken by Ghana to reaffirm its support of human rights online. The U.S. urges the government of Ethiopia to follow suit and restore access to the global Internet for all its citizens. Likewise, all governments must protect and promote the rights to freedom of expression and association as guaranteed under international human rights commitments.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.